found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. It's your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien. And we have our special guest today, Chris Yoli. He is the... If you haven't heard him before on the show, he...
Shame on you.
Yeah. Why haven't you been listening? He is with Ominous Press. He's also the co-founder and festival director for Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival. And Sleeping Giant. Well, welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I am good.
That's great.
I'm good, too. How are you?
We are all well. So, Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes. Happy New Year. First episode of the new year.
Yeah. How do you feel? Do you feel new? Do you feel fresh?
Did you watch fireworks?
Did you?
Did you shoot up fireworks?
I did not. I did not.
Oh. But who are we? We are Synthaholics. We're Synthaholics.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. On Twitter, we're at Synthaholic Duo. I am at David_J_Duncan.
I'm Blackbird2004.
And Guy is at GS Davis Art.
He's not here right now. Guy's not here.
We were a little late notice on this. Sorry, Guy. I just found out yesterday.
So this episode of the new year, we thought we'd talk about something a little old and a little new.
It's like the best of both worlds or something.
Yeah. So best, we're going to talk about the Next Generation episode, Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2. And this episode came out on June 18th, 1990, Season 3, Episode 26, written by Michael Piller, directed by Cliff Boll. Wonderful episode.
Two episodes.
Well, wonderful story.
A couple of years ago, they had the Fathom events when they were doing the Blu-ray release of the Star Trek on Blu-ray for the 25th anniversary going, and they were putting in like once a month. And they put Best of Both Worlds in as like a, they edited it together as one giant episode. Did you all know about that?
No, I didn't know that.
You told me about this.
Oh, yeah. But it was great. Like, this is actually before I knew you, because I was writing obituaries at the time.
Wonderful job.
Yes. Yes. It's actually very thematic for 2016. I was not working there in 2016.
Right.
But it was great. They edited the movie together, and they showed a bunch of like behind-the-scenes stuff before that was going to be on the Blu-ray. And one of the funny things is like Patrick Stewart came on, and like people would recognize him, like, you know, right after Best of Both Worlds, and like, "You ruined our summer," and like they were yelling at him for like, you know,
yeah, no doubt,
for that cliffhanger. It's like I have anything to do with it.
Well, actually, I did read that one of the things that they didn't know if they were going to renew Patrick Stewart's contract or he wanted to stay on the show, and that they were going to write him off. And this was one of the things they were going to do. They were going to put Riker as captain of the Enterprise if Stewart decided not to stay on the show.
But I thought he signed for six seasons at the beginning.
There was a rumor at the time that there was going to be, and they weren't saying who. They were saying it was going to be a major departure on the show. That's what they were expecting. Probably during contract negotiations. It's usually when it happens.
Probably.
And then you had this cliffhanger, so everyone just presumed it was going to be him. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Patrick Stewart, which would have been a mistake.
But then it was nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. Beverly Crusher still stayed somehow. I mean, Gates McFadden stayed.
They all stayed, besides Denise Crosby, and she came back because she realized it wasn't exactly what she thought.
Yesterday's
you always
Enterprise.
Have to love when actors or actresses make that decision to like exit a series early on. Oh, now it's a major hit, and now, yeah. You know,
I need to come back. Well, it's a good thing because like they were going to cut. Like I remember, like I think I was listening to one of the Women at Warp episodes. They interviewed like Denise Crosby or Marina Sirtis or something, and they had said something that, like, you know, basically if Denise Crosby didn't quit, like, they would have, like, fired, like, Troy or Beverly or something. I can't remember who.
Budgetary?
Budgetary or just, like, well, I guess they wanted to, like, redo the ratio of men to women or something like that. But if, like, you know, it's a good thing she left because someone might have gotten axed just from
I remember something. That. I remember reading about that, too, as well.
Also... The only thing I didn't like about seeing it in the movie theater was because this is a two-part episode, And the cliffhanger is probably part of what makes the episode so great. When the last thing you hear in the first episode is fire.
Right.
And then it's like at that dun-dun-dun-dun, like dramatic music. And because it's edited together as one just movie, basically, all the music was gone and it just went into the next scene. So it just kind of like, it just didn't have the same feel. Like, this episode is meant to be two separate episodes, not one entity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just before we jump on the show, I just want to talk to Chris here and just see what's going on with Ominous Press. I know you guys have been hard at work with getting new issues out, and also with the Dream Festival. I know you guys just went through your you just had the festival recently in November.
Yes, we finished our fourth year in November. It was the biggest year for us. We had great attendance. We had over 30-plus filmmakers come in from out of town and stay in Buffalo. That number is going up every year, and it was a great event. It's a lot of fun, and it's an obscene amount of work, but it's worth it. and it really is. People have no concept. It's like my business partner and I, we just don't sleep.
Yeah,
and that is Greg Lamberson, who he's an author and a filmmaker.
But last time you were saying like you didn't speak to each other right after the film festival because it was so horrible. Was it better this year?
Well, usually we don't. Usually because we're so exhausted, we shake hands and then find a way to sleep for a couple.
You
days.
Both walk into the oceans like Godzilla.
Exactly, and so worn out. We broke it up a little. We actually did a 10-day festival this year, which was we showed over 105 films. And one of the reasons is we always have to reject films we like, and we extended it over on a second weekend so that we could show even more good stuff, and that's going to be the format moving forward into 2017. And as far as Ominous Press goes, we're at issue 3 of the Legendary series, which is finishing up Bart Sears' stories from the 90s. And then issue 4 is coming out, and that's where all the new material is going to begin, where you're going to see the three different comic books, Prometheus, Giant Killers, Demigod coming out.
That's great. And I know just because, I've been following everything that you guys have been doing, that you've been like basically everywhere. You were in New York City.
And, yes. Just finished up a convention in Las Vegas.
And nice.
Now working on like the schedule for 2017 to see what shows we're going to attend. There's always like the kind of the big ones. Mm-hmm. And then, but it's funny. Like some of the smaller shows are so great because they're really more about the
Buffalo Comic Con. That's a pretty small show.
The value to those, I think, always is that when you have those giant shows, even like San Diego, it becomes more about people just wanting to see celebrities and waiting in those long lines.
Yeah, sure.
Smaller shows, though, you have like the celebrities tend to be the artists and writers for comic books, and it's more about people appreciating
The craft.
So I think you have your positives and negatives, but the big ones are great. At New York Comic Con was like 100,000 people.
It was a great time at the Buffalo Comic Con this year. I got to see you again, like right after we recorded. It was like, oh yeah, hey.
Yeah, and it's nice that we have two big conventions in the city now.
So. You're pointing me out that like the Harley Quinn variant cover artist was there. And you're like, oh, go get it signed. I was like, sweet, I'll go do that. Yeah. I bought it. It was pretty awesome.
And aside from that, things are going well, and it's good to do something that you really enjoy. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, because I just always worry from what you've told me with the Buffalo Film Festival, you're so exhausting what you put yourself through. That
well, as we move forward and as things grow, we're going to start reaching out and having as many as more people that can help maybe watch some films and stuff like that, because it's just it is exhausting. I mean, we had 350 submissions last year. The only way to do that right is to watch. Now, mind you, a portion of those were screenplays. But we have to watch every single film, and sometimes you watch it more than once. So do the math.
Yeah, how long that takes.
And when you get a massive like flood near the end of your submission close, like you are just up all night watching movies and taking notes, and it's a labor of love, really.
That does sound utterly exhausting. Like I love movies, and I don't watch movies all that often. I just don't have time.
I think I'd become delirious after a while.
Too. It's like, well, what's funny is I go back and I sometimes I go back to look at my notes when there's the judges going on. And sometimes my note is indicative of my state of mind, but it brings back the film. Like, I remember one was worst newscaster ever. It was the actress they chose.
They chose.
And it ruined the whole scene.
You're just like, I hate this.
I can't stand it.
That's funny.
You know, it was just one of those funny things.
And there's just the things that you think about when you're half, you know, you're trying to pay attention, but your
brain you is really do. And fried. It's an exhausting. But again, it's when you really love doing something, then it's totally worth it, you know.
That's great. So. Well, we'll jump into the episode here just so everyone can enjoy the best of both worlds that we all share. And that is Borg coming to Earth.
Yeah.
They're coming to Earth, guys. Just set your clocks to midnight and they'll be here.
That's right. They're going to assimilate.
So the episode starts.
Shoot off your fireworks. It'll be fine.
Well, they shot off their fireworks at the New Providence colony. And unfortunately, the Borg came. So New Providence colony seems like one of the furthest. They say it's one of the furthest colony away from, you know, in Federation space.
They were Quakers and pilgrims, and they had their hats with the belt buckles on them.
They're making oats and bed frames.
I love when it's like 1,000 years in the future and a space colony is, you know, they show up and it's just a farm.
Yeah. And they're all wearing straw hats.
They're all like, what?
There's donkeys,
pigs, and chickens. It's like what we're doing.
You know, we do have technology for all this stuff. You know. But
it's funny like how they find New Providence as the giant crater in the ground, because we've never I think this is the only time the Borg have ever done anything that kind of destructive. They usually just like take things over, not like
I just wonder
they don't giant do mass scoop. Excavation.
Yeah,
they just like a giant hook that comes out of the sphere.
Yeah,
that goes,
scoops them up. Oh, then they sift out the organic matter and
they assimilate. Oh man, I gotta assimilate that. That space slug.
Actually, that'd be hilarious if they had one of those giant sifting screens that archaeologists use. Yeah. There,
where's the gold? Where's the gold?
People and the rocks are left. You know,
just dump them in the machine.
So yeah, so Riker, Data, and Worf and LaForge all go down to the planet. They find it's all scooped out and gone.
Where are we in the right place?
And couldn't they freaking
ask that question?
You're in the middle of town. How come the middle of town is off to the side of town?
Yeah, and how come their scanners just couldn't say there's a giant hole in the ground? Yeah.
It's like, oh, are you at the right coordinates? Last time I checked, the coordinates have X, Y, and Z axes. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, if they were in the middle of town, they were like,
they would have fallen. They would have fallen to their death if they were beamed to the correct coordinates.
That would be amazing. I'd love to see that.
I mean, if you could just scan for individual life forms on an entire planet, then you can pretty much see
the space larva.
Right. Oh, there's just a hole there.
Well, that was the teaser, and you kind of got Borg's here. So the next after the commercial break. You have the Enterprise traveling alongside another ship, and it has Admiral Hansen and Commander Shelby, and they're basically telling Captain Picard and Riker that Starfleet is not ready to take on the Borg since they've basically discovered the Borg. They're like, we've
been sitting on our hands.
Well, they've been developing things, but they're just not ready for it.
We've been eating lots of little slugs, little worms.
Little worms.
Oh, yeah. Maggots. Yeah, we've been too busy doing that.
It's been a busy year for us. So they basically say that they're underprepared and that they're trying their best to get the fleet up to snuff. But what happens is that we get the revelation that Riker was been giving. Multiple commands.
This is his third offer for his own ship.
No.
And Riker's just the ultimate slacker.
Well, I don't know if he's a slacker. I think he's got daddy issues, which I think we've discussed before in this episode.
He had daddy issues, and it was like he was just, I want this ship.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, there was.
He's waiting. He's just waiting for a field to
daddy promotion. Issues, but also a little bit of an Oedipus complex because he wanted Picard out of the way.
So you think he's waiting until Picard goes on a away mission and doesn't come back?
You know,
do you think he's that diabolical?
I don't know. His brother was Tom.
Tom was
murder twin.
Yeah.
Murder twin powers unite.
Riker would. There was always something that made me think maybe he shouldn't be a captain. Like when he would just sit on the weapons console to have a conversation.
Yeah, he puts
his ass launch a photon torpedo. But you
not happen?
You know, there's this. He just park his ass on the console and nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Oh, I also like how he's too busy. And Generations is a prime example of him being a terrible leader. It's like, what's the weakness of a bird of prey? Oh, maybe it's a 100-year-old ship. Maybe that's a weakness.
That guy's still flying that.
It's like they're flying. It's basically a motorcycle, and you're in a aircraft carrier. Come on.
Well, yeah, it's a modern day car chase with like a Model T coming up the road after you. You could beat it with a Toyota.
Anyway, so he was offered the Melbourne, and Commander Shelby is a supposed expert on Borg and the Borg threat. Commander Shelby, basically,
when has she seen the Borg ever? Like,
she hasn't.
Where does she get her? That's a great
point, because it's like the export is someone who's had no personal interaction with this alien race.
Well, and apparently from Admiral Hansen says, that everyone had their own opinions of what to do with the Borg, but she was the only one that cut through the BS and was like, this is what we have to do. This is what was said.
Maybe she helped design the Defiant with Sisko.
Maybe.
You also have a perfect example of the phenomena that exists on Star Trek, where people from other ships are like jerks.
Yeah, everyone else is
like any other ship.
Everyone else is an asshole. God,
I would never want to be on that ship.
Yeah, it's like everyone's an asshole. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Who was the commander in which one was that?
Oh, the episode where Picard went on the secret mission.
Yeah,
he was just a dick.
Yeah.
Jellicoe.
God, I hate that Jellicoe guy so much.
Yeah,
he made Troy put on a regular uniform. Like, what's wrong with you, dude?
Cover
the cleavage.
Cover that up because I can't control my feelings.
What was
it? And my penis.
Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to go into what it reminds me of. Anyways, but Shelby assumed that she was going to take over his position because she thought that he was going to be transferred to the Melbourne as captain.
Yeah. So she's trying to play stuck up to Picard.
Yeah, and basically Riker is kind of like, you, this is my job.
My job. Yeah. I'm not leaving. Yeah.
So Hansen has a candid conversation with Picard, basically saying, what's up with Riker? Why isn't he jumping onto the next level of his career? And you got to give him a little kick in the ass.
Yeah, but Riker is very comfortable on the luxury casino ship of the of the Federation. He doesn't want to go to the station wagon of the Federation.
No, he's become quite.
Sometimes you see some of those other ships, and they're just
They look like they're from Kirk's era. They're also 100-year-old ships.
Well, clearly they're still using a Reliant class.
Yeah.
And, or they have the one on occasion that would show up. It looks sort of like the Discovery from 2000.
Sure, yeah. And they're still wearing the old uniforms from Wrath of Khan, so.
Yeah.
They haven't even upgraded their uniforms.
The Excelsior is still
Yeah, how's the Excelsior, whatever it is, 50 years later, 60 years later, still in play?
That was the Enterprise B design. Really, you have. Yeah. Recycled, you haven't, there's nothing newer. Unfortunately,
a couple updates.
Unfortunately, it just comes down to the problem of Star Trek and budget. Star Trek's never been a big budget thing. So,
I remember in the 90s there was complaints saying, oh, we're spending $100,000 an episode on effects. Like today, that's nothing, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah, there's that. That's
per opener today.
but still, it's where do these other ships, the flea market? Is that where they're coming from?
I don't know.
Well, next, Commander Shelby, who is gunning for Riker's job, is invited to a poker game where she basically calls Riker's bluff because Riker has.
How does Troy never win? She's got her feeling synthesizer thing. She should win every single game.
And how does Data not win just doing this, the numbers of the cards?
Yeah, crunching the numbers, yeah.
Well, maybe he's playing fair.
I mean, he's basically the Rain Man of the whole.
But whenever he went to the Casino Royale in that episode, he won everything he did.
Right. That's why
he even crunched dice back into the correct weight.
Well, it's the same thing with where No Man's Gone Before, where Kirk beats Spock at 3D chess. It's like,
no,
you know,
no.
It's just I know Kirk isn't dumb, but I don't think you could beat Spock. I'm sorry,
you kind of needed him.
Yeah,
you know.
But anyways, so Shelby beats the pants off Riker, kind of showing him up. So after that, the next morning, they're supposed to go down to the colony or the what remains the colony to do some analyzing. Shelby basically jumps the gun, goes there an hour early
with
Data to collect samples and everything like that. And, you know, Riker's justifiably pissed that he, you know, jumping the, you know, that she jumped the gun.
His orders were subverted. It could have been dangerous down here. What, next to the giant hole? I might have fallen in. There's no rope.
What samples and readings haven't you gotten already? You know?
Why didn't you take them yesterday?
Yeah, and why can't you go at night?
From what we can tell, it was a very big scoop, potentially bigger than we originally thought.
It's the biggest scoop we've ever seen.
You know, instead of a giant bugle, we've got a giant scoop potato chip.
Giant spoon that went through.
It's like the planet scooper instead of the planet killer.
So, so basically there is sort of a, I don't want to say dressed down, but basically saying that. You can't.
Oh, make your head spin so fast you feel like you're a first year cadet.
Yeah, but so then they have a lot of there's a lot of meetings from there, basically trying to figure the configuration of weapons and shields and how to defeat the Borg. And there's
the Borg. They are pretty boring.
Bored. We don't want to be bored for the rest of our life. And again, another confrontation between Shelby and Riker about.
Orders
of how she needs to sleep and she doesn't want to sleep. So,
do it now or I'll make you tired.
Wasn't her hair annoying?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
That did stand out.
Her hair's weird, but I really like Shelby. I love her as a character.
I like her character.
I'm really upset that they never brought her back ever.
I am upset that they didn't do anything better with her hair. It was kind of sitting up there in that weird.
Just, you know.
Product of the 90s. What can you
exactly,
say?
Exactly.
Janeway, her hair unfurled.
Yeah.
her bun unfurled.
Yes.
Janeway.
They just don't know what to do with women's hair in Star Trek. They get so hung up on it. They do just weird things. Like, her hair didn't bother me. I guess I'm just used to seeing it all weird.
Well, anyways, from there, besides their hair.
It's all on the big screen. You know, what you see on the big screen, you know.
Just rubbing that in everybody's face. I saw this on the big screen.
I saw it on the big screen.
It's got different insights now.
Yeah, I know.
Like you're smarter than us or something.
It's just I've seen it so big. Like her hair was as big as I was. I'm like, it just, you know, you just don't, it doesn't faze you anymore.
it doesn't shock you anymore after that. There's not much that does. So after that, we get a call by Admiral Hansen, basically saying that one of their ships was attacked by the Borg and they went missing. Enterprise goes at maximum warp to see what's going on, and from there they engage the Borg. Again, they find they are just completely outmatched by the Borg. Everything they planned in their planning sessions
does not work.
Shelby does come up with some kind of tactic to focus their phasers on. The tractor beam that's pulling the Enterprise in and to blow that up. So that did work for the Enterprise. Shelby did save the Enterprise there. Enterprise takes off. The Borg pursues. And then they go and jump into a nebula and hide.
Because that's the best thing. There's always a nebula
in the body. Yeah, and still to this day, nebulous. Like, Rathacon started the whole nebula.
And it is,
yeah.
I think it's the exact same scenery from
Rathacon. Oh, yeah, it's the exact same design of the nebula. It's great. Like, that nebula is everywhere.
Instead of it's the Mutarim Nebula... It's a different nebula, which I don't think they name it. If they do, I don't remember. They hide in the nebula for quite a while, and they kind of get the ship back in order. And once they find out that, obviously there's still conflict between Shelby and... I mean, this whole episode is basically Riker
and Shelby going at each other.
Yeah, I mean, Shelby's basically gunning for... Riker's job
and she should be. She wants to turn on the luxury liner.
You know, just to touch on it real quickly, I find the and this episode probably the most interesting, the first Best of Both Worlds part one, interesting that Riker is kind of like he's having a hard time finding his footing, that he wants to stay commander. He does want to jump to the next level, And even Picard has a discussion with him. He's like, you don't need a safety net. You can go off and do your own thing. I found it somewhat moving and interesting at the same time. Like, you know, like when it's like, I think we've all been in that kind of position where, like, you know, when are you going to jump to the next thing? You know, like when.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, he had a good job.
It's right? cushy.
He was a commander, but he could still goof off, you know, hang out in 10 forward. So he probably had some of his own, you know, Picard handles the, you know, the paperwork.
Yeah. I mean, in the Federation, I mean, there's no real motivation to go on to the next thing unless you really, really, really want to be captain.
Well, that or you just like certain color uniforms.
There's no pay. I mean, like, other than if he's trying to satisfy the ego trip, I mean.
But I do think it is part of ambition. That's what I think it all comes down to is how far your ambition is going to take you. Like, what do you want to do with your life? And how. I don't know. I think there is something to be said about it. We've talked about this multiple times, and someday we will do a show just on the economics of Starfleet and the Federation. But
I think that's actually been requested. I think Andrew actually requested that.
I would love to do one. We do have to talk about that sometime.
We'll have to do some actual research.
It's going to be a ton of it's going to have to be a ton of research. But I do think there is some credence to it. I don't know if it works completely, but I do think I think a lot of us, if we were just given, hey, you know, all your needs in life are taken care of, just do what you want to do. I think we could. You know, if we were given the right, you know, motivation.
I mean, we talked a little bit about this when we did the.
We talked with Guy, I know.
Yeah, it was the Trump episode that we did.
The Trump episode.
Well, the districts episode where, like.
Oh yeah,
and we talked about that a little bit. Like, you know, how, you know, money,
the Deep Space Nine,
the two-parter with BC.
yeah, Kid Rock of Deep Space Nine. Kid Rock. I can't remember it right now. I'm sorry if it escapes me.
But yeah, the concept of, you know, a future where it's more than your basic needs. It's not a matter of just your basic needs are taken care of. Pretty much all your needs.
All your needs except for maybe like, you know, love and family.
Yeah, it does come down to
all your basic physical needs. Right. You've got shelter, food.
Well, the Maslow's hierarchy, basically. Yeah. You're taken care of just the basic needs, your food, shelter. And, you know, actually,
physical and sex is taken care of, too, in that. You've got holodecks.
So, like, all of your standard, like, earthly life worries are taken away. So then it just becomes a matter of what do I want to do with my life and what do I care to
do? Do you want to just sit around and do nothing? Yeah. Or do you want to actually do something with your life? And I'm sure there's tons of people that do nothing, but there might be a good amount of people that do, you know, move forward and do some amazing things. Well, anyways, going back
he's going to be the most amazing commander of the Enterprise for, like,
maybe
15
he just wants
years.
Maybe he just wants to be commander of the Enterprise. That's all he ever aspired to.
Yeah, I like
it. That's nothing wrong with that, I guess, and when you think about
it. Yeah, but that's what I was just saying. Like, there's no if he likes where he is, he's got no reason to go anywhere.
Absolutely.
There's not a pay bump for being captain of the Enterprise.
Was a crafty, you know, plot device, because the fans knew, like, again, the rumor that someone major was going to depart the show, and they said, could it be, you know, Jonathan Frakes? Could it be Patrick Stewart?
I was too young to, like, follow any of this.
Sure,
care, I had no idea any of this was happening.
And this was pre-internet, like, before it was everywhere, so it was,
you had to be, like, reading the magazine and, like, do the fan emails and everything.
Well, I mean
not emails, just, like,
well, there was email, and there was, you know, some basic message boards, but it wasn't very, you know.
Yeah.
It was very different.
It wasn't a podcast or anything.
No. so anyways, just before – so they're still in the nebula. They're hiding out, and Picard has a conversation with Guinan. Guinan basically says her people were decimated, but their civilization carried on because Picard's worried that this might be the end of, you know, basically the Federation and his, you know, his civilization.
You know, this might have been a good time to mention Sauron and that maybe he should go stop Sauron before he does something crazy.
It probably would have been good if she mentioned that to him, but maybe she figured this was not the time.
Not the time. No.
So they have this nice heart-to-heart, and it actually is it's a nice conversation that they have.
Anytime the next 4 years, could you mention that, please?
So the Borg starts basically throwing charges into the nebula, and Picard decides to, you know, to bolt out of the nebula from there, and... the Enterprise gets put under attack by the Borg, and this is where Picard is captured and brought into the Borg cube and assimilated into Locutus.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They mount a rescue mission where Riker's like, I'm going to go save him. And Shelby, no, actually, no, not Shelby. It's Troy.
Troy like, tells him,
you're acting captain now.
You cannot go.
You can't go. It's like just like what you can't let Picard.
And the look on his face.
He's like, this is what I've been doing to Picard for years. Oh, my God. This is the worst thing ever.
Exactly.
Is that the taste of shit in my mouth?
Yeah. Oh, great.
Oh, it's Shelby shit.
Shelby shit in my mouth.
I can't do anything fun anymore.
Yeah, all your fun is taken away.
You
that's
sit
what
the
captain
big chair.
Is.
They're going to walk up. Can
they
you
flip the channels?
Captain? Oh, fine.
At the same time, so Picard is taken, and they're trying to retrieve Picard off the ship, and they've been devising a plan to take to make a super weapon of their deflector dish and make it into a giant cannon that could, you know,
take out the Borg.
Basically, make a wave motion cannon on top of the deflector dish. That was a Star Blazers reference, if anybody was interested. Anyways, there goes they find Picard. Basically, he's assimilated. There's not much they can do. They have to basically get out of the ship because they're surrounded off the Borg ship. They're beamed off, and from there, Picard or Locutus contacts the Enterprise, saying that he's going to be the liaison between the humans and the Federation.
You will service us.
Yeah, and this is where Riker just decides, screw it, and he's going to fire. And this is where we have the big
the dramatic music. So great.
And it's a great way to end the season. Of course, like you said, it pissed off a lot of people.
Oh, you didn't know, but it creates it's that great buzz where, you know, people that fans of the show are just going to talk about it all summer.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it was rated like one of like the best two parters like of television for all time, like top 50 of all time or something like that. It's like
it's great.
Really,
it was pretty amazing.
It won a lot of like awards. These two episodes,
right,
and there were subtle stories. Elements in there, like, you know, that the Borg felt the assimilation of the human race needed to go a little differently, and maybe the humans were a little more evolved, that they felt they needed that liaison and they had to go after, because other races they wouldn't care, they'd go scoop them up. And
I did have a hard time understanding why they were important enough to even bring that up. Like, I mean, like, why would the Federation need to have,
I don't know. I feel like every single race in Star Trek is pretty individualized, except for maybe the Pakla.
They are, but
I mean the Ferengi want to do their own thing.
I think to like a larger extent, like there's
the Cardassians are just big on subjugating Bajorans.
Writers over the years, like with the whole Q element, you know, like he was captain. I think they summed it up perfectly in the final episode where he was trying to tell them they were on a course to do something different and to like evolve, and maybe that was, you know, part of the deal with that, because he wasn't, you know. Q probably wasn't hanging out with Klingons the way he did.
Well, who would want to?
Well, you know, there's the smell.
Yeah. The prune juice.
Yeah.
The diarrhea.
The Gok.
Oh, God. Klingon diarrhea.
I wonder if Gok's still alive when it comes out.
I do firmly believe that
it
does.
Just wash it off.
Yeah.
And, like, they reconstitute it.
Oh.
What if it then is like one of those delicacies like that?
This is a twice eaten gah.
Like the eggs, the black eggs they ferment in the ground. You know,
oh man,
some
like
cultures.
Like they can they can like capture like the Klingon emperor's, you know, past gah, and they can mark it up to really high. It's like this, the Klingon emperor ate this gah.
Wasn't there some kind of coffee bean that like some kind of lemur would eat, and they would shit it out, and they would like, and they would like.
It exists. It's the most expensive coffee in the world, and I've heard there's different versions of it where they say it's some sort of like marsupial or
a cat. I don't know what it was.
Eats the bean, craps out the bean, and then they roast those beans, and you get this incredible coffee. But you know what?
Cat shit coffee.
I'm fine without my cat shit coffee.
I don't know what the name of that coffee is. You know the name of that coffee, please email us.
Yes,
let us know.
Email us, and I hope it's cat shit coffee. I really hope it is.
Cat shit coffee.
Well, here's
It's not Colombian. It's catchy.
Right.
It's
so catchy. My
Juan Valdez.
My advice to anyone listening is just to go on Google right now and type in catch coffee because something's going to come up.
There might not be the answer what we're talking about.
Rule 34, catch a coffee. Do it now. No, well, please don't.
Anyways.
You'll probably be blind the rest of your life.
To redirect back to the show real quickly, get away from catch it coffee. So part two starts, and we get the deflector dish firing on the Borg cube.
It does nothing. It
has no effect. And that basically comes down to, because they assimilated Picard, he has all the knowledge of everything going on with the Enterprise and the Federation.
Yes.
And so...
all their codes? I mean, like,
he could just deactivate the ship, I'm sure.
Oh, probably. You do the Reliant thing to the Enterprise.
Just the prefix code, and that's it. So Lacute just basically informs them that, you know, everything's over. You're done. You know, just forget it. So, and they're heading off to basically Earth. And they don't even bother. Shot. They don't even bother taking on the Enterprise.
No. What's the Enterprise going to do? What are they going to throw at?
Yeah,
it? You know,
the biggest thing they could throw at it did nothing.
Exactly.
It's like, oops.
Yeah. So, they have a meeting with Admiral Hansen. Admiral Hansen says that they're having they're meeting the Borgard.
Wolf 359. Even getting Klingons involved, and maybe we'll even ask the Romulans if they want a party.
So they get 40 of their ships together, and unfortunately, we find out that 40 ships is still not enough.
Well, but I mean, again, these are 40 of the like 50 to 100-year-old ships. I think
they had on hand.
I think I saw a Saladin class ship in the wreckage.
That's awesome if there was.
I mean, that's a really old ship. I mean, Guy Davis loves the Saladin class.
I love Saladin too, but
I think, but it's like a
no. That's an antiquated ship at this
that's
point.
That's really old. Like, you might as well. I mean, I know the Archer ship wasn't invented yet, but I really want to see
a space shuttle broken and floating by.
I really want to see an NX ship float. Like, I want someone to go in and CG like an NX ship wreckage floating in there. Just, I mean, like, I might as well, like, if we're gonna use a salad, and let's go ahead and use an NX ship that doesn't have shields.
Right. Well, so Enterprise kind of gets fixed up after they're burning out the deflector dish, and they decide to meet them up at Wolf 359.
They're late to the party.
It's late, but and basically it's a complete shitstorm. The whole fleet is wiped out, so... You know,
they're like just like wading into a child's room with Legos all over the floor.
That had a tantrum at the same time.
Oh, man,
destroyed everything.
This is a problem.
And so that basically spells out the doom of the Federation because they're heading now straight for Earth, and there's not much they can do about that because their only weapon has been fired off.
Neutralized.
Yeah. So they come to, one other thing. Guinan meets with Riker, has another meeting. Riker feels a little put off that Guinan's visiting him in the middle of all this.
She's like, why are you visiting? You're the bartender.
Why don't you go down and tend?
Go listen. So she tells him, basically, which is good advice.
That me and Picard have a relationship that's deeper than a friendship, that's deeper than family, and we screw a lot.
I was his boyfriend.
Yes.
She's the Frau Brücker.
Well, you know, they addressed it on Family Guy. Did you ever, you know, do it with Whoopi Goldberg? All the time.
right, exactly. So
definitely. And she's like, just get rid of it. She's like, forget about him. Yeah, that was a quick lay.
Yeah, well, but she basically says you got to forget about him. And she's completely right because to surpass Picard and his ideas and the way he ran the ship, you're going to have to go away from that because he's going to expect everything
if you do it the way he did it.
By his book. So you got to throw away the Picard book and write the Riker book.
She's definitely right, but...
So Riker takes Shelby, makes her second command.
Just because we don't like each other doesn't mean we can't work well together.
Yes.
Yeah, because you've been shitting on me
and sleep all together.
Yeah. And from there, after that, they decide to make a couple plans. They're going to separate the saucer section from the Enterprise, and they'll do a dual attack, And that will be a different way to kind of, and they're going to retrieve Picard from.
Because that's the only thing they can think of. It's like, well, we can't beat them. Maybe we can, maybe the information can go both ways. Yeah. Maybe we can extract something from Picard.
Right. So Enterprise confronts the Borg cube one more time. This time, like I said, they separate the saucer section from the main ship, and they both attack. This kind of throws the Locutus.
Because they're just basically shooting fireworks at the...
That's what it looked like, fireworks. They call it antimatter explosions. Like, bursts. Like, wouldn't antimatter do bigger
things?
You
know. Big holes and things.
Well, so they basically throw the Borg off enough, and while they're doing that, the shuttlecraft goes in with the engines off so they can go through the shield?
Yes.
That works?
I think the engine off was so they didn't get, like, shot at.
Noticed at by the Borg?
Yeah.
So they fly in with Data and Worf. They retrieve Picard off the Borg ship.
They kidnap him.
Yeah, they kidnap him.
He didn't want to leave.
No, he liked it there. The food was great.
just standing up in this alcove. Oh my God, this gives me all my needs.
Just pure energy. Just beamed right into the gut. So they bring him back to board the shuttlecraft, and they beam him off. They beam them, all three of them, off the shuttlecraft just before the shuttlecraft was destroyed by the Borg.
Oh, nice.
So after that, what happens is they retrieve Locutus or Picard, and they start hacking into the subspace message that they're getting from the Borg, and Data hacks into, with help of Miles O'Brien, which is probably the most help Miles O'Brien has been.
They let him out of the transporter room.
Yeah.
He left the transporter room? How'd that ever happen?
I know. It was interesting they would even let him do that. And meanwhile, the Borg cube is flying right towards Earth, ready to hack Earth completely up and assimilate everybody. After kind of a prolonged way of trying to figure out what the Borg command divisions are and what they can do, and Data's kind of hacking into their system. Picard kind of comes through, and they were able to communicate with actual Picard and not the Borg side of him being Locutus, and he gives him suggestion to sleep. And just before they...
He must be so tired. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
I think I should rest and nestle him.
Shut up, Beverly.
So useless.
So shut up, Beverly.
Nuzzle him in my bosom.
Why don't you go put another rainbow outfit on your son and send him up to the
bridge? So
you need to clean his rainbow underwear, too.
And that'd be awesome if you wore rainbow underwear. So just at that point, Riker's ready to ram the ship right into the Borg cube because they're out of options. And Data implements the sleep command and puts all the Borg to sleep. They beam aboard. They do find they're all asleep, but the ship's on some kind of overload, and it's going to self-destruct. And it does self-destruct.
I can't believe a Borg ship would have self-destruct in
it. It must be some kind of sequence that if they knew that.
I think it was a... Whatever, they can call whatever sci-fi term they want, some sort of feedback thing that was happening.
Feedback loop, yeah.
Blowing up the cube.
Well, so...
Let's interrupt it. Let's study the Borg. Nah. We will never be bothered by them
again. Well, I don't know if they'd had enough time to figure it out. I guess they could have if they really wanted to.
We will never be bothered by them again. We will take this golden opportunity.
They'll never be a problem. We've clearly blown up their only scoop.
They'll never come back. Never come back. So, and from there, the Borg cube is destroyed. Obviously, Picard is free from their control. They remove the implants off Picard. And Shelby goes on her way, and they're going to rebuild the fleet. Riker decides he's staying.
And like 1 year, like they're going to rebuild the fleet. You're going to build probably another 100-year-old ships. Will we rebuild all these 100-year-old ships?
Well, I kind of see it. It's got to be, well, hopefully, and then at the 100-year-old ships.
Yeah. Let's get that salad and that Constitution and the NX class back. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's change that up a little bit. So it wraps up from there, and you have a little moment at the very end where you can tell that Picard was extremely disturbed by the experience he went through.
Well, they addressed that, of course, when he went to visit his brother.
In the very next episode, Family, which Family is an amazing episode.
Yeah, it's an amazing episode. Yeah, absolutely.
And it was good enough where they carried it over into First Contact, where they they were able, because they had a budget to show like the depth of like the damage that was done to him on a psychological.
It was fantastic. I love fan, and it's such a weird episode. Like, they're barely on the ship at all. It's just in France, with his asshole brother, a bunch of mud wrestling men.
I enjoyed that episode a lot, but
I love it. It's a great episode.
But so that the two episodes wrap up there. This is probably one of the high watermarks of Next Generation, of course. This is just awesome. The writing's great. The acting's fun. Shelby's hair is stunning.
Spaceships.
Many spaceships, blowing up. And
nebulas.
And I always go back to like the brilliance of like that, the design of the Borg ship, because it's so like, there's nothing fancy about it. So boring.
It's efficient. You know? It is. Apparently. Somehow. You know,
Not even engines you can see.
There's not even like multiple like, you know, phaser weapons banks. There's just one beam that's just
shoots out. This is all we need.
We only need this.
Yeah.
Well, now that we kind of just recapped it, Chris, since you're a guest, obviously this is, I said, this is a high watermark of Next Generation.
Yeah.
What are some of your thoughts and feelings about this episode? Anything that stands out or anything you like to comment about?
I thought this was where they were moving into that whole strain where, you know, once Roddenberry didn't have as much influence on the show anymore, where they were really going into that whole thing where they were taking time to develop all the characters and give them real stories. I mean, this was great. It had all the elements you'd want from like a movie. You have this, you know, kind of clearly defined villain.
It does feel very much like a movie. Even like the way some of the shots are done, like they're done a little bit differently.
It could have been a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And it was, if you were a fan of the show, and I was a big fan of Next Generation, like that cliffhanger, like, was, you didn't want to wait at all. You wanted it to, everything to be okay.
Yeah.
Just
make it okay.
Yeah. Just like, please.
I remember being shocked as a kid for sure.
And they answered some questions, because people would start asking that if you have like, you know, a brain, like, well, why doesn't Riker have his own ship? You know, he's been doing this for a while.
Right.
So they gave you time to like really address all the characters, and everybody got some of their own time, you know.
For sure. But I mean, like, you know, then again, Sulu was on the Enterprise for like 30 years before he got the Excelsior.
Yeah, he did. And that was because he demanded it. And he demanded it for that movie, that he be a captain.
And the strange thing is,
he didn't want to be in the same room with William Shatner.
Chekhov and everyone else are still in the same positions. They've never moved on.
Uhura's still doing her...
like, why isn't Uhura like captain of her own ship by the now, you know?
She's just got the, you know, the Bluetooth in her ear.
Yeah, she's addicted to that Bluetooth.
But yeah, I do remember, you know, back in the 90s, this being so, well, I guess it was the end of the 90s, or end of the 80s, but it was so like, wow, what the hell is going on?
And, you know, even when they had the dramatic thing where he was going to fire on the Borg and destroy, you know, his captain and everything, and it just didn't work. It didn't even make a spark.
Right.
Just had no impact. So I thought it was good, and especially as far as character development, it gave this haunting thing to Picard to use later, and like when they encountered the Borg later on, like people had that just kind of pure wartime hatred.
Oh, yeah.
Towards their enemy. When people were like, yeah, they're people. Now they all have to die.
Kill them all.
You know? My response to that threat was to go to one of the old, you know how they have those Starship depots they've showed a couple of times?
Mm-hmm.
You know they still have the Doomsday Machine from the original series.
We just talked about that.
They do.
Right? They still have it. They've had time to study it. You just turn that on.
It's funny you bring this up.
And point it towards, not just the Borg ship, but that entire quadrant, and then you go to bed. You know,
just let it go.
Let them mess with that.
We talked about the Doomsday Machine last episode.
Okay.
There's actually a book called Before Dishonor. It takes place after, the last Next Gen movie. But basically it involves Spock, Seven of Nine, and the Planet Killer. And the Borg are invading again. So, like, they go and they try to reactivate, like, Seven of Nine and Spock try to figure out how to turn the Planet Killer back on so they can use it to fight the Borg. Like, it's hilarious that you mentioned that, because we literally talked about that last time.
Because it makes sense. You turn it on. I would think after... What is the time difference between your original series and Next Generation? It's close to 100 years, right?
70.
All right.
Because Bones is still alive.
Yeah.
Because you see him in the.
You've had time to work on that thing. You don't just park it and leave it. Thank God it's turned off. Right? You've got teams on it. You know how to, you know, focus that baby.
Yeah. In the book, it's like in a museum right next to the NX-01 or something like that.
What? It's hilarious. See, that's just poor planning. You know?
Yeah. They should have been people studying that.
You know, it's like, you know.
This is the ship Decker flew into. And, like, you know, you see Thomas Decker, like, standing out and looking out and look at it. It's like, I'm going to be like my daddy
one
day.
It's like finding the Death Star, like, just floating empty in some quadrant and saying, let's just park it and make it an artificial moon for someone.
Yeah, let's just leave it there, an amusement park.
It could be a good tidal shift mechanism for indoor or whatever.
You know, something like that. But
it's a moon for a moon.
Yeah, a moon for a moon, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Dave, I know this was one of your top 10 of Star Trek episodes.
Yes.
So, like, do you want to kind of, like, you know, jizz all over this or what?
It was good.
He really leaned in when he said that.
There you go.
Yeah, I just had to finish all over the microphone. I'm sorry.
He's smoking a cigarette now.
Yeah. I'm a very simple man. No, but it's great. I mean, like, it's great for all the reasons I mentioned, and, like, getting to see it on the big screen was amazing, and the high definition. Like, you know the torpedo bay is on the Enterprise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it says Enterprise, like, underneath that. But, on like, back on the day, it just looked like a black line. But, like, you could read it, like, as clear as day.
That's
like,
interesting that they must have gone through and done some sort of – because that was all standard definition, you know, when it was shot back then.
It was standard definition, but the detail was built into the ship all along. Like, they even made a little animation about the people walking in the background. It looks like Beavis and Butthead. It's crappy, crappy animation, but it's just enough to make it look like there's people moving in the lounge behind the bridge.
Huh.
That's also on there. If you watch it on Blu-ray and stuff like that, you can see it now on regular TV if you got high def, if you got the Blu-rays. It's pretty amazing. Like, just learning all the stuff about it from the movie theater and actually owning them on the Blu-ray now.
Keep throwing that movie theater out there again. So,
I used to love watching the behind the scenes when they had you know, the one little scuttlebutt ship, like the nacelles were like Bic razors, disposable razors, and they glued on.
Right.
They dressed it up well.
Just like Qui-Gon's communicator. His communicator was a woman's razor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He liked his woman's
shaped. There's a
problem
with that stuff is you can't get away with it. Like, filmmaking now, like, if you shoot in high def, you can't really get away with that stuff anymore because it's so crystal clear.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, it was, like, just – it was sort of blurry enough where you could, you know,
Right.
Well, you know, they painted it and put some greebles on it to make it look a little bit different. But took off the razor part, but there was, like, the handle part of the razor was pretty funny.
Well, besides that, anything else you want to –
Just like you said, like it's amazing. It feels like a movie. Like, it doesn't feel like a regular episode of TV. Everything is shot just a little bit differently this episode, I think. You get one of the earliest Geordi power roles when they have to shut down the engineering.
The Geordi power hour.
Reading Rainbow.
That's right. Everybody got a power.
Everybody,
hour, even the character you didn't care about.
You gotta like roll through the doors, even though you got enough time to walk underneath it. Yeah. It makes it look better that way.
Oh my God.
It's just one of those fantastic episodes. It's got the Borg. The Borg are always a fantastic enemy. Although it's weird to see how much they've changed from, like, the first episode where they have Borg babies in a drawer to this episode where they scoop up things. And then to the movie where, like, they don't even scoop things up. They just turn everything into Borg. Like, they turn the cities into Borg and everything.
And they've retconned, like, an answer to, like, the babies in the incubators. That it was when they assimilate like a species and they take children.
Right.
They just put them in those maturation chambers until they're big enough to be used as regular Borg. That's what they – well, I thought it was much more creepy that they were like growing babies.
Right. You know? Right.
Let's make them babies bigger.
Yeah, that's – I do want to talk a little bit about the Borg and the changes they went through over the last, you know, whatever, 15, 20 years or however long it's been with them. But anything else that you want to touch on besides that?
It's just – this is where Next Gen. I mean, season 3 in general is where Next Gen started to get its stride.
Yeah,
its first two seasons were a little bit rough, but like this is where like Next Gen like just like took it to 10.
Yeah, it shoots it right out.
Yeah, and it stayed at 10 until season 7 where they started doing weird things again.
Well, it's I think that you get to a point where the show had enough success where the writers had some comfort. Could be, some of the things they wanted to do a little bit more. And it had a true, like, you know, like kind of an epic feel to it, a real cinematic feel to it. And it was a show, I think, coming into its own and doing like dramatic. That was it was 2 hours, right? It was basically a movie. I thought it was great.
Well, and then I think we talked about when a couple months ago when we talked about Unification Part 1 and 2 for Next Gen. That's obviously when Roddenberry passed away. He must have been getting to an age where he was not going to be showing up as much or not as
effective. Because this is like a year or so before that.
Yeah.
Like maybe two at the most.
Maybe two, yeah. And I think that that might have touched on it, that he wasn't around or he didn't have much of as he wasn't as involved. I don't know the exact
like a couple years ago, like I thought he died before they did this episode because it just was so dark compared to what Roddenberry did.
I don't know if you've ever watched it. His son did a documentary. Did you see that?
That was fantastic. It was really Trek Nation, but very well done.
One where they did address like when he was kind of, let's be honest, like pushed aside on the show, but it was because he felt like he was in charge of some, you know,
like mission from God,
because of what the fans have just had just kind of convinced him of over the years.
Right.
Where like
none of the characters
could have interpersonal conflict. He really he wanted this whole like kind of, it was just one unit, all these people working together on a ship. He didn't let them do individual character development as much, which I mean, well, look, it came from somewhere. But thankfully, in time, once like that level of influence was taken off or that control they were allowed, you have to have character development in a show.
Yeah, for sure.
And Best of Both Worlds really gave you a lot of that. It gave a lot of depth just characters that might not have fully had it.
Right.
Yeah, and like I mean, before the show we're talking about, you said like, and they kind of like, got rid of all of that stuff with Deep Space Nine, but it was almost great because it was
freeing.
Freeing. And exactly. Storytelling was just so amazing what they could do when they were freed from some of those shackles.
I do recall distinctly that, you know, because my father was a Star Trek fan, maybe not as rabid as I am, but he did enjoy Star Trek. And when the Borg came aboard as a villain, he kind of felt that it was like, this is like getting a little too weird for Star Trek. And I do think it took a weird turn. I think it's just the complete faithlessness of the Borg. And this is where I want to talk about the Borg and their changing roles. Like at first they were just a complete collective of a faceless collective of races and technology, you know, kind of like put together. And when we got First Contact, which is an amazing film, I love the film, but the Borg Queen, I kind of feel takes away from that. I kind of feel it gives it more of like now it's an ant colony.
But I think the Borg Queen, I like what the Borg Queen did. The Borg Queen gave the Locutus thing like a reason. I like that because it didn't, like you were saying earlier, it didn't make sense that they all of a sudden wanted to make a liaison.
Like, why would they care?
It makes more sense that the queen wanted an equal than that they just randomly gave the humans a liaison.
I think what you got a sense of is that the human race as a whole wasn't something that could be easily assimilated by them. Maybe just too much independence.
Mm-hmm.
It could create a problem. But the Borg Queen, that is a very, Aaron, that's like a very common thing. That fans had a backlash against the queen. They felt it was just kind of a crap story element, whereas the writers felt that it was needed for dramatic effect. It was needed to give, like, they viewed it as the command node where she was representing the entire collective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I mean, mind you, that's writer spin, like, after the fact.
Of course.
But, I mean, I'm kind of indifferent to it. It doesn't really bother me that I thought it made for a great movie.
I thought it was a great movie. I thought adding the queen didn't diminish it at all. I thought it kind of made sense, except for that. I was like, well, if they killed the queen, wouldn't like the whole Borg go into disarray?
Descendant of like the original race that sprouted the Borg.
Humans were the original race that sprouted the Borg, according to the books.
But she was of like the whatever the bloodline was that originally she was like part of that.
It doesn't bother me that the queen was. I just kind of felt like it was like a really like completely scary idea that the Borg were just so completely.
Well, it was just a giant, you know, armored beehive floating in space.
Exactly.
I was like, you know, but they don't want honey. They want you.
They want you, honey.
Yeah. They want to, you know, take the good elements of yourself, of what the races are, and then throw the rest away.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
And there is a creepiness to it of like there's no reasoning.
No.
Like, there's no negotiation. There's no, like, all of these hostile races that they've dealt with in Federation, they've...
You could talk your way out a little bit.
At one time or another, they've sat down and, like, go, look, what's the point of shooting each other
right.
anymore? Let's, you go, like, the Romulans, you go live over there. We'll have this buffer zone between us. It's like a separation where you live in the same house.
Right. Yeah,
right. You know,
it's a duplex. We get the duplex set up.
The Borg just don't care. It's like we're gonna just gobble you up, and then we're gonna move on to those annoying. We might just destroy the Klingons because of their big heads. You don't know because you didn't see any of them.
But it's like instead of them being locusts and they just taking everything, they made them into ants or bees. Which I mean, right. I don't mind. I think it works thematically. I like the Borg Queen. What I don't like is that. How Voyager never got blown up in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like,
the Borg were just totally like wussified in Voyager. Like 50 ships met up at Wolf 359. Yeah. 50. And Voyager takes on like 3 Borg cubes at the same time. And it's a small 150 complement science vessel.
I know, but
it's a science vessel.
We've talked about the problems with Voyager more than once, but
there's a lot of problems.
There's a lot of problems. A lot of logistical storytelling yeah. problems with Voyager. But that kind of the other thing, and it's not an issue really. It's just a geek screaming into the woods. But after he got many wedgies.
Are you referencing Guy again? That's not very nice.
No. this is personal story. The Earth is Sector 001 for the Federation. Isn't that a little, like, kind of an assholic way of, like, viewing the human race? It's like,
they view the galaxy.
We're number one. And this is where everything's ran. It's not the Vulcan planet. It's not the Andorian planet. It's not the Tellarite planet.
Especially not the Tellarite planet. It's like somehow they get last in the number.
I would love to see the Tellarite planet. I wonder what that looks like.
It's like lots of food troughs everywhere because they're all pigs.
Well, maybe they had a meeting about that, like the early Federation meeting, and the humans just showed up with like that number one hand you see at ball games.
Yeah.
And the Romulans just, or not Romulans, the Vulcans just didn't care.
Well, maybe it's...
Yeah, the Vulcans don't, I mean, the Vulcans
whatever, you can be one if you...
Maybe one will be two.
Maybe because the Federation was formed on Earth...
That's the rationale.
The sectors just branched out from Earth.
Yeah, but come on. It's kind of like...
Vulcans weren't interested in doing the Federation. The humans had to convince them to do it.
Aaron hates his own people.
I don't hate my own people. I just think it's
looks in the mirror and hates
it. It's like, I hate you.
I do that, but it's an ego. It's an egocentric kind of thing, you know. It's like,
thank you for not killing us.
But you know, you're just sitting there like, yeah, we're number one, and they're coming right to us. I mean, let's face it. So we've had the Borg multiple times come to Earth. Now
we had the little bug things from Conspiracy come to the Earth.
Conspiracy. We've got the whale probe. V'ger. Yep. I mean, like,
well, V'ger was our fault. So okay. V'ger's fair.
There is a lot of hints, and I think this is people just looking for those hints. To be honest, where there is this school of thought that V'ger was responsible for, like, it's on some level like the Borg.
The Borg.
Well, I think the Borg were responsible for V'ger.
You know, it could be.
It's possible.
Either way, because they indicated the Borg had been around a lot longer.
Or they went, or V'ger went to Cybertron and came back.
So, yeah, that makes more sense.
That'd be Cybertron. A great crossover right there.
But also, the books that come right after Before Dishonored, the Destiny trilogy, they also deal with the rise and fall of the Borg in a 3-part book. It's really good.
Well, so that's me screaming into the woods. But, the other thing is, we've all been saying, this is such a great two episode. It could be a movie. I wish it was a movie compared to Generations.
Good God, Generations.
Well, I think we've talked about
what's wrong with you people?
Yeah.
Well, I really believe it. That is you cannot ignore like how badly the studios meddle in those films.
Oh God, so bad.
And it's across any big film. I mean, look, Josh Whedon like ran screaming from like Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of studio involvement, not letting him do what I'm sorry, he only made you $1 billion the
first time. Give him some creative freedom.
Yeah. This is
So you can't ignore that. And that is completely, you know, the Star Trek is festooned with that.
Yeah.
That just involvement.
I think it's all across the board. Any big franchise, it just gets worse and worse.
Because I stand by my statement that the the final episode of the Next Gen series should have been the first movie.
Yeah, all good things.
Yes,
100%, because it was so great.
And Q, and Q deserved, John DeLancey deserved to be in a movie.
Absolutely.
For Star Trek. Well, for sure.
That, that was a brilliant. That final episode was incredible. You know,
they had to bang that out in like a week. And the same two writers wrote Generations, and they had months and months to work on it.
And could you imagine? Could you imagine if All Good Things had like a movie budget with like effects and everything?
Exactly, it was amazing.
It would have been great. You would have had in like real like character development stuff going on in there, and then you could have moved on to First Contact, which was, I enjoyed. And then they kind of fell off again and did the lighthearted
Insurrection.
Good gosh.
Which was just a big episode.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
not even a very good
one. Over the top for their final.
And then it was just a really, really poor Wrath of Khan clone.
And the crew, or I should say the cast, have all talked like how that director had no idea what he was doing, and they all had a very bad time on the set.
The Red Letter Media for Nemesis, like the whole reason they have that whole Argo scene where they're off-roading is because the director was like, oh, Picard likes, you know, or Patrick Stewart likes off-roading, so we're going to, like, design a set
dune
piece.
Buggy.
A set piece where he can ride a dune buggy around.
Which makes because so he much likes, sense.
Like, so you created a shuttlecraft to house a dune buggy. So you created something that's extremely useful to house something that's not useful at all.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a weird scene. Just to go on, just a couple things here. Our last episode that we had Chris on, we talked about Conspiracy, and our director for this episode for Best of Both Worlds is Cliff Boyle, and he directed Conspiracy as well. Another interesting thing is Cliff Boyle worked with a whole bunch of people, not just with Next Generation. He worked with William Shatner. He directed directed the pilot of T.J. Hooker. So there
nice.
You go. He also directed lots of episodes of The $6 Million Man, Baywatch, MacGyver, The X-Files.
How come we didn't get any Baywatch stuff happening in this episode?
I know. He was
Deanna Troi running in slow motion.
He also works with Avery Brooks for Spencer for Hire, and with Ricardo Montalban in Fantasy Island.
Wow.
And the Bullion Race is named after him.
Nice.
So
he's big
Cliff
and blue.
Boyle. And the only... Everyone says he was nice, but Will Wheaton says that he kind of treated him shitty on the set because he was always just kind of just grabbing him, like literally physically grabbing him and putting him in place in the scene. Like, okay, you stand right here.
He didn't think Will Wheaton could act. Also, some people still don't think he can act. But
yeah, I mean,
I love Will Wheaton as a person. He's a great geek, and I love his tabletop show.
I mean, if you see Stand By Me, it's not a bad movie. Come on.
I've never seen it.
We have a Will Wheaton defender.
What's that?
Will Wheaton was – I mean the way they had to write him off the show by making him like, you know, a space wizard, you know.
You're a wizard, Harry. Oh, you know.
He's so special.
Well, the Traveler in the first season told them that I've got to molest you one day, but I got to wait till you're older before it's legal.
Do you want one finger or all three?
And then I can take you around the galaxy and show you
how
to do
it. Just wait till I start phasing you.
Ooh.
We'll phase into each other. It's kind of like Odo, but like...
He would just show up. He's like, how old are you now? Oh, I gotta wait a couple. I'll be back.
I'll be back, yeah.
I'll be back on your 80s birthday.
He's very special. Like, and the thing is, like, it's almost sort of implied that he's got to be related to the Traveler to have the... So he, like...
I never quite
knocked up his mom.
We should talk about that sometime. Get into the Will Wheaton Traveler, you know, like, cross connection.
So how was he a traveler if his dad was, you know, Mr. Crusher? So I'm pretty sure his dad wasn't really Mr. Crusher.
Yeah, exactly. He was, you know.
Pretty sure the Traveler traveled.
Oh, maybe it was that ghost thing that molested in Sub Rosa. Oh,
is the ghost thing also a...
Maybe it's a traveler that's molesting Beverly.
Beverly's family, yeah.
And maybe he molested her and gave her his
seed. I don't think she didn't get obsessed with him
and
until Sub
Rosa. He would be sort of like the Anakin Skywalker of the Star Trek universe.
Oh, creepy.
You might actually pick Hayden Christensen over that.
Oh, God. I don't think I'd still pick him. I just
I don't know. I mean, you're talking about like Wesley Crusher here.
Well, the thing is that we've got on.
They're both pretty whiny.
We've done a
couple. They should have a whine off.
Yeah, they did, but I just. we've talked, because we've covered now, Chris, we've covered episode 1, 2, and 3 of the prequels of Star Wars.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we've just basically discovered how much we do not like Hayden Christensen's in those movies.
You know what? Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I've had a lot of thoughts. So one thing, especially with the new movies, and I'm a George Lucas defender in this respect, in that he is actually – there's a lot of subtlety to his storytelling that, unless you're really paying attention, doesn't come out. Now, that's a fault in him
as
a director.
It's so subtle. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous how subtle. Like, in a way, he's pseudo-genius, but he's so pseudo-genius he doesn't explain to you where it's coming from.
That's because the fundamental problem is he's so enamored with, nowadays, the effects and this, and like the green screen and everything like that, that he wasn't directing actors, and that's a problem.
Well, he didn't even direct actors back in American Graffiti.
Well, yeah, but if you go back to the – he only did the first movie, right? And right. Then he had other directors come on to do 2 and 3. Look, David Lynch was supposed to direct Return of the Jedi.
That would have been amazing.
So weird. And Lynch, I'm a huge David Lynch fan, but he turned it down because he's
going to do Dune.
Well, what he said was, it would be my movie, not yours.
Right.
Is what he said to Lucas.
Yeah.
But I think it would be a crazy movie.
Oh, my God.
It would have been amazing.
So strange.
Jabba the Hutt. The Jabba the Hutt scene would have been bonkers.
So then you have
Laura Palmer walks through.
Yeah.
You have him walking or directing these prequel movies, and there's no one. He's at a level where there's no one saying, hey, you should stop.
Yes.
This is bad. Like, no one's telling him what to do. He's writing all the dialogue, and it's awful.
That's what we were saying.
Like,
he had no one to challenge him.
My comparison is the Paul McCartney. You don't have a John Lennon say, that song sucks.
Yeah, no, just sing it. Just sing it. Get a ukulele. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And it really is that. And I do have respect. Like, the first movie is annoying.
Ugh.
And I'll tell you how I would have fixed it.
Ugh.
Let me give you my fan review.
Sure.
I'm literally in pain. You're just talking about
I would have mess. I would have had Anakin be older, not a child.
Yes.
Right?
Not played with Hayden Christensen.
Exactly. And one thing I would do is I would probably have him – this sounds stupid, but I would probably have him be older, angry, of course. I would have had him be black hair with blue eyes, and I would have had Padme be blonde hair with brown eyes, so that when the children came out, they were a proper mix of both parents.
So strange that you brought that up.
Right? So that you could see that Luke wasn't just so much like his dad. Luke had enough of his – and I would have done that. I think that's like a nice visual subtlety you can put in there. Because Star Wars, if you really look at it, the first 6 movies, it's really the story of Anakin Skywalker, because at the end of the 6th, he really is the one that brings balance back to the Force. He's the one that destroys the Emperor, not Luke.
But there is no balance in the Force anymore if there's no Sith.
Well, but the other side of it is
well, I think if you read after that, like, you know, Luke wasn't as rigid and so dickish as – because if you really watch those movies, what you see is the Jedi had become flawed.
Yeah, they've been so entrenched.
They're
basically
so entrenched.
Riker and his command position not wanting
to – I've had to talk about this. Had Qui-Gon not died – and he was Anakin's master. What you probably would have seen is, like, all right, this kid's got a problem. I'm going to take him to, like, you know, the space brothel, get him laid. Qui-Gon probably would have done that. I'm going to get it out of the system. The kid is obsessed with his mother, and they just want to keep him from his mother.
Well, we'll get him some really hot MILFs. You know, it'll be cool.
Some Twi'leks.
I'm just saying, like, those are probably some of the things that might have happened behind the scenes.
Well, but, like, Dave always brings out, and I think it was a great idea, is that, you know, the prequels should have focused more on Obi-Wan.
Well, they were meant to. It was
because I think it would have been a stronger story.
Let me tell you something. If it had happened the way it was supposed to focus on Obi-Wan. They even had some a production art put forward where the Jedi had a more almost samurai look to them.
That would have been
cool.
Because they were older, you know, and that it was supposed to be Obi-Wan, and the actor that desperately wanted the role was Kenneth Branagh, and I thought he would have done.
Oh, wow.
He would have been an incredible Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was obsessed with Alec Guinness. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, but he...
A little old, though.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't make sense because, I mean, Ewan McGregor is a young guy, and, like, by the time they get to, like, A New Hope, he's, you know, in his 70s sitting in the desert.
But, I mean, he did look kind of old. I mean, they aged him pretty well.
Well, they had to for the movies.
In Revenge of the Sith.
I just think it would have made more sense to have him be older and, you know... But I'll be honest, I really like the Qui-Gon character. I just thought the movies were, it was, you know, a masturbatory fantasy of CGI.
Yeah.
and was less focused on stories and acting. Because look, yeah. Natalie Portman's a great actress.
So is Liam Neeson.
But you watch those movies. Well, he can. You know, she's really struggled in those movies.
That's the one thing as we talked about in those all those episodes is that is the Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman. Both beautiful people, and yet there is no chemistry whatsoever. No chemistry.
Well, I think that's Hayden Christensen more than anything else.
Yeah.
And because the subtlety in the story is, I mean, you see the Emperor who's so powerful that he can hang out with the Jedi and they have no idea that he's there.
Right.
And that he has been slowly, delicately manipulating this kid his entire life.
Right.
And feeding into those fears and everything else, knowing that he's so powerful, he wants him to have, you know, be his own. And really, and there's another subtle element if you watch the end where, you know, Obi-Wan just leaves him to roast on the I'm going to take your lightsaber and get out of here, kid. Just to enjoy being on fire.
Right.
When the Emperor shows up, there's this delicate moment where you see him like kneeling. He puts his hand on his forehead. Like it's not like I think in the later books where they portrayed the Emperor's hating Vader and always treat him like garbage. Like there was a father-son element to it too.
Okay.
You know, but you have to... It's something I think if you're just going to like enjoy the movie, you won't get.
It's also interesting because on that scene, when it flashes back between like Obi-Wan's putting his hand on Natalie Portman's head too,
yeah,
like just like checking her temperature because she's like freaking burning up, mm-hmm. but like you know, mm-hmm. fever, but not like physically burning up. But it was interesting. Like it's interesting juxtaposition between those two scenes when it goes back.
And that's what I'm saying is like Lucas is capable of that. And I mean, when you really think, like the Rebels cartoon, like not Rebels is the newer one, but the Clone Wars and everything else.
Right.
When there were some incredible episodes of that series, like really, they kind of blew me away. And Lucas had a direct influence with the writers on all of those, on what mm-hmm. his overall like story arcs were.
Sure.
But you know, it doesn't look. I there's so many failures in those in the prequels that.
Well, in the prequels, I think you're right. They became so enamored with the special effects, and unfortunately, the story suffered. The thing is, and I don't want to get into Rogue One because we are going to talk about it in the future on our a future episode here. But you know, Rogue One, great movie, visually beautiful. The only thing I felt going away from it, because we had a discussion, if you go
on the Nerdynomicon.
Nerdynomicon, yeah, we talked
check out
about
their podcast.
Yeah, podcast. We did a
immediately after viewing.
Yeah, like the day
opening
like
night,
hour, yeah. 2 hours away. We recorded our reactions. It misses, and of course, this is not the same. But Lucas obviously puts in Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey within his hero's story. This does not have any of that.
No.
It's just a bunch of jackasses in the Star Wars universe. And that's where I think it kind of goes away. And I know the prequels don't really have the hero's journey as much. It kind of like mm-hmm. it has like maybe little echoes here and there because it is Anakin. But I don't know. Just like Star Trek, I feel like your science fiction should have something that's going to be – it's not just –
that us. Guides it.
It's just not us out in space.
Well, you know, I actually qualify, like, you know, I think I see there's a distinction between sci-fi and science fiction.
Sure.
To me, the way I would define it. Science fiction is just more, I think, story-driven. Like a movie like Fifth Element, which I love, I think that's science fiction to me, whereas, like, sci-fi is, I think, more of the pure entertainment, you know.
Sure, but...
type things. But there... With Rogue One, I mean, I think what they're trying to show, A, yeah, they want to make a Star Wars movie.
Of course.
But also that, like, there's all these little side, like, these people you don't know about, all these little side, you know,
and that battles you don't need to know about.
That you don't, maybe you don't need to know about.
Right.
But they're getting their ground. They paid $4 billion for Star Wars. They're going to do what they, you know.
I guess what my point is that I always feel that most, especially science fiction, not so much fantasy, because fantasy is a little different. I mean, can be, but.
Yeah.
I always felt that a good science fiction story, no matter how it's based, if it's hard science or if it's soft science like Star Wars, it should have some sort of moral underlying story that's trying to – like a great Twilight Zones.
You're right about that. Like if you think back to like – I was a big Transformers fan when I was a kid.
Sure.
And I watched all those cartoons. Now, they just wanted to sell us toys. Make no mistake.
Of course.
They just wanted to sell us toys. But they couldn't help but give you like an ethic lesson along the way.
Right.
And your morals along the way because that's what you did. You have good and evil, et cetera. And I mean that – I think those lines get more blurred
right.
you know, with a lot of stuff now.
Well, and just to go along with that is that something that's kind of like come to my attention, and I don't know if anybody else has picked up on this, like, you know, obviously Disney World and Disneyland are picking up on the Star Wars theme because they own Star Wars. They've got like stormtroopers just kind of like marching through the thing, and I'm like, they are the bad guys.
Well, no, just like what they did with Epcot.
Right.
Right? They took Epcot, which is the symbol of like this beautiful future of
future
like science and like
and they project the Death Star onto it.
And they project the Death Star into it and have like a planet killing thing.
That's fucking morbid.
Well, look, it's very common. Like if you look at the story of say Luke Skywalker, this is a great story of like the farm boy that goes to like fight Absolutely. And like wins this giant, you know,
goes against
saves the world.
Monster and saves
exactly.
the story of Theseus and all these other
exactly.
things.
Yeah. And then you have but I mean the bad guys we do I'll tell you, we do something with Ominous Press where we have on our website you can vote because there's the two sides, the light and the dark, right? The two main characters. And we have, you know, you can vote for which side you prefer. And well, guess which one is creeping up?
Dark.
Dark. It always is. There's this current infatuation in our culture with, like, villains.
Why?
Who knows?
A lot of times it's the coolest. I mean, Darth Vader. I mean, if you say someone who knows nothing about Star Wars, granted, they're not very many. The first person to say is Darth Vader. He's the most iconic character in Star Wars, even more so than Luke or Han.
I don't know. I just I have an issue with it. It's not that I don't. Obviously, I was a huge Darth Vader fan. I had a poster of Darth Vader in my room when I was a kid growing up. I mean, I loved Darth Vader growing up. I hugged Darth Vader at the Burger King. Some guy dressed up as him, and I said, "I love all your movies." When I was like, you know, 8 years old or whatever. That all being said, I feel that, you know, like stormtroopers marching through Disney World as like, it's like, why don't we just have SS guards marching through
Disney World? And that's a thing. It's like, I think, and part of it is that storytelling when you think of like Vader and like Anakin Skywalker is what he never gave himself completely over. And he had to live like so many years of knowing, like he created this kind of Nazi hell.
Yeah.
That existed. Yeah. Like that conflict was in him the whole time. Like, look at, and that's another thing. If you really look at the prequels and you see, like, you know, Naboo, right? The ships, everything was beautiful.
Right.
Technology. Why the Emperor was so successful is because, like, they had achieved this level of society where, like, war on that scale just simply didn't exist.
Right.
So, like, the droid army, like, it was just a real problem. And then they had, like, you know, manipulating with the clone army and setting all that stuff up. No one knew what to do. You know, the Jedi just kind of jumped in and, like, started fighting.
Right,
and it was,
right.
But, yeah, Vader was responsible for creating essentially what was, like, Nazi horror, like, upon the entire galaxy.
Well, I mean, obviously, George Lucas was pulling off, you know, the Nazi, stormtroopers and everything like that. Obviously, that's all a callback to that. It just, to me, is like, now we have elevated in our pop culture, and I think we've, as collectively, because there's not many World War II, you know, survivors left in our society, I don't think we remember the crazy batshit stuff that happened.
Oh, I know.
You know?
Of course we don't.
And I mean, obviously, I was not alive for World War II, so I don't know. But I have read and, you know, known enough about history to know how crazy it was. But I think a lot of people don't freaking know.
Well, just like there's one of my favorite, like, was it memes or whatever you call it online, where it's like Obi-Wan giving Luke the lightsaber?
Oh, yeah. It's like,
here's your father's lightsaber. He killed 35 children with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's what he did.
He killed 35 kids, and I maimed him and left him for dead, and I took this as a memento for me. I mean, you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just...
I cut off the rest of his limbs and left him on, like, you know, a volcano.
Yeah. I don't... I guess the whole thing is that... I have an issue when it comes to we've elevated the dark side of everything. Like you said, the Epcot symbol planet thing turned into the Death Star. That's freaked out. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I love the Death Star. I love all that stuff. It's fun. But I wouldn't elevate it to that status.
But it was a Star Wars celebration there. And like, I mean, it's not like they could project it. Well, I guess they could project an X-Wing on it, but
Aaron's talking to like a larger point. And, like, you're talking about like what you're celebrating is like the worst.
What are you celebrating? Thank you. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. And like we were saying before we start recording, we were talking about Zack Snyder's version of DC and Superman, how it's this dark side of
everything. Really dark blues and like maroons
instead
of like, you know, bright reds and bright blues.
Even the feeling of Superman. Superman should have been, you know, this high ideal of like the of somebody that maybe you will never become Superman because you're not an alien from Krypton, but, you know, he could kill everybody in the planet.
Yeah.
But he won't.
If you really want to, and my, what I believe is like the truest interpretation of Superman, now that we've gone off on a different tangent here.
Way off.
We'll come back to Star Wars. There's two novels out there written by the same guy. One's called Miracle Monday. There's The Last Son of Krypton. And I think those are Superman books that are, I think, the best representation of what the character is. Because it wasn't with – Luthor viewed Superman's existence as an imbalance in the universe. So he chose to become the villain to bring that balance back. And he was just a pure criminal. And Superman was just as smart as he was. It wasn't necessarily a battle of like brains versus brawn. Superman was just as intelligent, and it was just, you know, who could outmanipulate the other one. Great books if you ever pick them up. It's quick. You read them in like, you know.
What were they called again?
Last Son of Krypton, and the other one's called Miracle Monday.
And they're novels, they're not comics.
They're novels. They're paperbacks, and probably 125, 150 pages maybe, but they're great books to read.
Nice. Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you on the whole Disney, like the celebration of, I mean, Doritos commercials, there's Darth Vader.
Yeah.
It's when I was a kid, like that wasn't, I mean, for me, it was less Luke Skywalker than it was Han Solo in the Millennium Falcon when I was a kid.
Sure.
And I had my Han Solo and Carbonite was him frozen in iced tea because I didn't have the toy.
Yeah.
Yet, you know.
But I mean, but that being said, Chris, is that, you know, Han Solo was still a good guy.
Well, he was. That's what I mean.
He was a little shady.
He's like a pirate to the heart of gold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's shady, but he's on the side of
gold. Well, that's why. But he still was a good guy.
Yeah,
and it was, you know,
and obviously we see him come around.
Yeah, you do. You realize that he just it was how it, whatever happened in his life that like jaded him, and you know.
And that's why, I mean, I think we've touched upon this on past episodes, but this is one of the reasons why I love Star Trek compared to a lot of other things, because Star Trek is supposed to dwell on what humanity could be, the better side of humanity.
The hopeful version of the future. The
angels of our better nature. And I know there's been a lot of talk in the last recent year or so of how our society has slowly become more peaceful altogether, that we've had less homicides, less, you know, dreadful wars and stuff like that. And, you know, hey, maybe this could be the calm before the storm. Who the hell knows? But as on par, we have become a better in society. And I'm just hoping that we continue to become better. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's a different story. I mean, but that's what I would want. That's what I hope for.
I want Star Trek to happen.
I know. Me and Dave talked about this more than once.
This needs to be a thing. Like
that
this,
we put away stupid prejudice. We put away our small mindedness.
I think if you're looking at it from like like a realism, you're going to inject that perspective into it. I mean, it's the only way we'll really survive as a species.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, if we get over like the petty nonsense, and that includes like not just people getting along with one another, but even things like religion.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, they didn't have the courage to truly touch on it, I think, in the series as much. But it was clear from some statements made that they had kind of moved beyond that.
Yeah, they kind of – we've talked about this more than once that, I mean, obviously alien plants will have religion.
Yeah.
But humankind seems to kind of be ambiguous. They touch on the on God, but they don't really say – what faith or denomination. So, which, you know, hey, I mean, I think that plays out good for a lot of reasons. I think you just don't want to piss off your audience to say, you know,
you can appeal to everybody if you're not saying
this version of religion is the religion that we're going to go for.
But that's where like there's the two places left to explore is the oceans, because we've touched so little.
Yeah. We don't know anything about it.
And then go the other direction, and that's like outwards. And it's really the only answer.
Sea quest.
See, what, you know what?
I watch Talking Sequest. Dolphins.
I won't.
I like Sequest.
I'll tell you, I was always a huge.
What is that, Flipper? What is it? Speak.
Well, they could have given it any voice.
Yeah, but they had to give him that stupid dolphin voice.
They could have been bold and like hired James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones,
the great dolphin's voice.
The dolphin.
But even you know that show. I was a huge fan of Roy Scheider, and he left the show because they, of course, in order for ratings, started becoming more about conflict and like military conflict under the seas. Then, like, he wanted it to be all about
exploration and
exploration and conservation, because he was a huge conservationist, that was his goal for the show. But people don't want to watch that; they want to watch lasers firing off like submarines.
Yes, I know,
like,
and that's the
underwater
thing.
Lasers.
And that's the same thing. And I kind of feel honestly that's where we're kind of going with Star Wars, and unfortunately, a little bit with Star Trek as well. We don't know yet. Of course, we talked. Before we record about Discovery, that there's some rumors that Star Trek Discovery might be taking place during the Klingon warp with the Federation, the 4-year war. I don't know if that's true. There's no way to confirm that right now.
It could make sense that they've got a main Klingon cast for the for the show.
Yeah, but like I'm hoping that the end result is that they're obviously come to some kind of peace resolution or something. I don't know. It's just one of those things that
we'll probably come to a Cold War, like how it was in TOS.
I don't know. It's a thing that plagues me constantly.
Maybe the show will build up to the whole Khitomer thing, right? Which is where that's what the peace accord came from, is the Romulans attacking.
But
the Khitomer accords that happened like Enterprise C,
right? Yeah. But I mean,
so this is like
This is pre Kirk. So this is Garth of Isgard from what's the episode? The crazy
for
house,
whom gods destroy.
For whom gods destroy, from the original series. Yeah. So if they have, maybe they will have a Garth of Isgard in this show. Who knows?
Until you watch it, you just don't know if they're going to do it right.
Yeah.
And even some good science fiction shows, Star Trek has, I think, a really uphill battle to make it work, because it's been done so many times in so many different ways, and I think they still covet it too much.
Yeah.
Uphill battles that CBS is producing, and they have no idea what they want to do with it.
Well, exactly. I mean, you look at what Sci-Fi Network did. They had, I thought, some great series with like the Stargate series.
Right.
And Stargate Atlantis, I really enjoyed that show, but the only reason they canceled is because it came too expensive to do. So then they went to that Stargate Universe, Voyager, where they were trapped on some ship, but it was a little more.
Didn't they do that with Buck Rogers, too? They were just flying around in space after a while.
Well, that was that might have been second season of Rogers.
Yeah, it was second season.
They had the flamboyantly gay robot on the bridge, and
it was fantastic.
Yeah, they were just it was. They were just kind of flying around in space.
But they had 3PO,
Twinkie,
and I always liked it. I always liked the Vipers, not the Vipers. What were the fighter ships called?
The Buck name
Rogers,
of them.
Vipers
or BSG.
I'm talking about Buck Rogers.
Rogers.
I remember
I've not seen Buck Rogers.
Okay, so they're the actual awesome fighter ships.
I actually had the toy of that, of the Buck Rogers
fighter.
That
was the throwaway design of the Viper from Battlestar.
It's a cool fighter. It's cool.
That was the original design of the Vipers, and they tossed it away and went with the smaller design.
Well, anyways, I think we've gone far off topic.
But that's okay. Tangents are all right.
Tangents are fun.
We've talked Star Trek, Star Wars, Superman.
I think.
And Buck Rogers.
What we're dealing with, though, is trying to heal Aaron's heartbreak.
It is part of it. Chris, you're right.
The Borg Queen,
The Borg Queen. But not just the Borg Queen, me screaming into the woods from the wedgies. It's the idea of I crave the idea that we could be a symbol for us to aim for, like a guiding light. Like Next Generation was that guiding light. The original series was that guiding light. Something, a beacon to go say, maybe we won't get there now, but someday we might get there.
Maybe we won't blow each other up.
Yeah. I just feel that we constantly be like, well, there's not enough laser gun shooting and I'm not interested.
I like when you made the comment about was your father felt like they had gone off too far
right.
with the Borg and whatnot. But, watch the original series. That was back in the day when they had true science fiction authors writing those episodes. That's how you ended up with like Abraham Lincoln floating in front of the ship.
That's great.
Or exactly. or
insane things.
And think, the thing that always stuck out about the original Star Trek series, think of how many odd parallel Earths they discovered. Yeah. Where they had these similar timelines.
Like three or four, at least.
Yeah. What was the one, remember, where there was the crazy captain that was just hosing down an entire army with the phaser, and at the end, Kirk read the Declaration of Independence as one Shatner can?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the episode right now.
And they had the actual Declaration of Independence. Right.
How the hell did that all come
together?
How did that all come together?
That was a totally different era of, I think, writing and,
And there's a theory out there that if space is infinite, then there is another Earth out there with everybody here doing this podcast right now, doing the same thing.
Maybe they stayed on topic better.
Yeah,
Maybe in the multiverse universe, they stay on topic.
Because we can't comprehend that the Earth.
Because maybe they don't drink the entire time while they're doing the show like we do.
Maybe they don't. Yeah. But anyway,
they're sober.
I mean,
it's soberholics.
That's my gripe with all pop culture, sci-fi, geek culture, is that we're consumed with the dark and not so much heading towards those.
And that's why we need Star Trek. And Star Trek is a beacon of hope. Like, all these people from NASA, were inspired by the original series. I really, really hope that Discovery has that hope in it, and that it'll inspire a whole new generation of people who work
really
at NASA.
Think about it, the only bad guys in Star Trek that became kind of beloved were the Klingons,
right?
And they kind of. I'm sorry for all the Klingon lovers out there, but they kind of became the bumbling neighbor.
Of course,
They
just drank too much blood wine.
Yeah, exactly. You just couldn't believe that they had it.
They got that far.
They got that. They had cloaking devices. Where were they just stealing it from everybody else?
I think so.
Yeah.
And you'd have to think so. That
they bang their heads together for fun.
But no one you don't have what Aaron's talking about, where the people just have this love infatuation with the Borg, or they're identified as a real problem, and these other, they suck.
Yeah. And there are people out there, and I'm not knocking if you love the Borg. Obviously, it's your thing. Yeah. But, there's people that genuinely, that's their favorite villain, and they love the Borg. That's what they're all about.
And I argue with my friend about Deep Space Nine, because it was his favorite of all the
Star Trek.
Also. Yeah.
But my problem was, the Dominion was basically, you just stay away from us. We'll stay away from you. You stay away from us. It's kind of the attitude they had. And it was the Federation that decided to send a bunch of galaxy ships over to show them what was what.
It's like,
they got their asses handed to them.
I mean, they had gotten captured. Cisco gotten captured. They sent a singular galaxy class over to help rescue them, because it was Quark and Cisco and Jake and Nog. All captured them, so they send a galaxy.
All throwaway,
but there was another
maybe
point
Cisco.
Where they sent a few in, just to kind of.
Well, they sent one in, and then they get kamikazed by the Jim'Hadar ship.
Right, right.
But my point being, I think that's where you saw the turn where it was a common thing with shows at that time, where it was became us in space. They engaged in chemical warfare.
Of course, we've talked about one of your favorite episodes more than once is Pale Moonlight, where Sisko draws the Romulan Empire into the war against the Dominion by basically
murdering, and sabotage,
yeah, just to bring them in. And I've listened to different people and different philosophies of how the ends justify the means and all that stuff. And there's some arguments to it, I guess. But sometimes in the time of war, you do need somebody to get down and dirty and take care of things that you wouldn't do normally. But that being said, Star Trek, I always felt, is supposed to be smarter
because that shouldn't have been necessary. You, even though you have races and conflict in that show, they all have, which was established in Next Generation. All those humanoid races have a central origin from a species that seeded the universe. They all knew it.
Yeah, they are all related to each other somehow.
But at the same time, it's if the Dominion or the Borg are this, that they're not a threat to one group. They're not a threat to the Fed. They're a threat to every planet, every race. Dominion, basically the same thing. There should be this coming together of minds of we have a problem. And we need to get together and work on this instead of poisoning and murdering.
But of course, as anything, even World War II, America wasn't really keen on joining in the fight in Europe when you have the Nazi and Japanese threats.
That's right, because the same thing with, you know, the French. I mean, it was the losses of World War One were so devastating.
They just didn't want
to. The United States had become xenophobic, and that's why we did the Lend-Lease Act. And the truth is, we knew that the Japanese were going to attack us. We just didn't know where.
Right.
We knew attack was imminent, and the government, for whatever, they kind of
just knew
what it would take to motivate the populace to say, okay, now we have somebody's ass to kick.
Right.
And that's how we got into it.
And so, FDR was cunning that way.
Yeah, he was. He was very cunning, you know. But that's
a polio.
If I were to announce my biggest beef with some, like, things in Star Trek and some other shows, is when it is us in space.
It's
like
not,
how we can identify now with what we would do now. It, you're stealing like hope from people, and you're also stealing that sense of like letting people think, you know, wow, I would have done this. I would have shot that guy in the head and blamed it on that guy, and then they'd be my friends instead of like,
right,
you know,
instead of taking the high road.
Taking the high road, and like maybe it's a little takes some more time, but I mean it's the way to do things.
Right.
And
yeah.
Like, we transition to what we understand, and that's a problem.
Right. Well, hey, you know, these are problems we're going to wrestle with probably for the rest of our lives, and I'll be screaming in the woods for a very long time.
Why are you hanging out in the woods so much?
Oh, man. Well, it's the only time.
Are you one of those clowns that just hang out by the edge of the woods?
I'm actually I'm more like
burying things.
Yeah. No, I'm more like Clint Eastwood in Paint Your Wagon, singing to the trees. I talk
and decorating
to the
them
trees,
with urine.
But they don't listen to me. But anyways, it was great talking about this. I mean, obviously, we've went way
and
off
everything
track.
Else that we talked about.
Best of Both Worlds. Best of Both Worlds, great episodes.
It's just great. I mean, like, I don't have an issue with this episode.
No, there's nothing to complain about this episode.
Oh, no. It's a great Star Trek episode. It's not episodes.
Yeah. And there's nothing really to, I mean, besides maybe Shelby's hair.
Shelby's hair is a problem. Yeah,
you know. It dates. It doesn't track well with
the. And you had that great, who do you think you're messing with moment with Data and Locutus at the end when he grabs his arm.
Yeah.
And he's just looking at him like, hey, you know, you nothing to me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm going to go take this from you now.
Yeah, let me rip your hand off.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just like how he looks at it too.
All
like,
those LED
that was
lights.
My hand.
If you pulled it off, and just fluid shot all over him.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, I digress.
Well, Dave, who provides all our music?
Oh, our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio. Rate us and review us, please. We need ratings and reviews so we can get up in the charts.
Absolutely. Let us know how you think. Give us stars, many Star Trek stars.
Email us at syntholics@yahoo.com if you have any questions, concerns, idea topics, or just anything we've said before that you want to comment
things
on.
Things that you scream out in the woods at
yeah,
at
what
night.
Do you scream out in the woods?
At night. When you're by yourself.
At night.
At night. Especially at night.
Like, come back here.
Get over here.
Damn raccoons. You can run all you want.
You can run
all kinds of things
time.
He's yelling in the dark.
Yeah. You know, we also have a Patreon. If you think the show's worth a dollar or more than a dollar.
Throw a buck a month. What's a buck a month? You spend more of that on coffee and hamburgers.
And feeding children overseas.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Less than a dollar a month. You can support a Synthaholic.
I know.
And also Guy, Dan, and that's at patreon.com/Synthaholics. If you want to support Guy and all the work that he does with USS Tamerlan and Witch is a Flame, and just because he's an artist in general, you can check out his Patreon at patreon.com/GSDavisArt.
And check out his comics as well. He's got some great online comics, like he said, USS Tamerlan.
Witch is a Flame.
Witch is a Flame. And he also does his podcast, Geek Tank.
Geek Tank, yeah, Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. And we're having him and his co-host come on to talk about Rogue One later this month.
Yeah.
Also,
with spoilers.
Tons and tons of spoilers. If you want to hear more spoilers about Rogue One, you can check out the Nerdynomicon. They did an episode earlier in December.
Hilarious.
Yes, it is very funny.
We are off the chain on that one.
Be careful. Robbie from the Geekiverse and Josiah from... No, I mean, sorry. Robbie from Artful Gremlins, Nerdynomicon, and Josiah from the Geekiverse. We did a four-way conversation. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing more roundtables with them in the future on their shows.
And Chris, where can they find you and Ominous Press? and everything else that you're in the many things.
How can they send you more movies to watch?
For that, that would be BuffaloDreamsFilmFest.com. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And as far as Ominous Press goes, you can just Google Ominous Press. We have a website. We're on Facebook, Twitter. And we just released a new variant from Bart Sears, a Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
Awesome.
Very nice.
Triptych cover. Three connecting covers. It's pretty sweet.
Bart Sears, as we were saying, is one of those artists that are very influential. If you don't know who he is, you should look him up and look up Ominous Press as well, because they have some amazing books coming out, and it's well worth your time to check them out. And there's just more good stuff that's going to be coming out soon.
And maybe they'll be at a con near you.
Yeah.
That's very true.
It could be.
Yeah, stop by and say hi. Say we heard you on Synthaholics.
Absolutely.
And they'll give you a thumbs up probably if they
will. Get an autograph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
check
hey,
it out.
We just hope that you have a great 2017. I hope you keep listening to us because, hey, we love talking about Star Trek, Star Wars, Superman, Buck Rogers, everything else.
Science fiction in general.
Yeah.
We love it.
We love it. We love talking with you. We love spending time with you and just getting to know.
And we love answering your emails. So, of course, send us if you want to just tell us how your day was, we'll read that on the air and we'll respond to it.
And Aaron wants really to take you out into the woods and yell things.
Scream things with me in the woods.
In his nondescript van, as he explained it to me.
Yes, yes, Aaron.
Let's not talk about the van because that's going to get me in trouble.
Okay. No serial killer van here.
No.
Shush.
I arrived and was told, just go park by the dumpsters.
I'll tell you about that later.
Easy to put the body parts in there.
That's my apartment complex dumpsters, you hear? Man, those things were full after Christmas, man. They were overflowing.
Full now.
Now they are, body parts and all.
Extra full. Well, thank you all so very much for listening. You know where to bury your body parts. Live long and prosper, everyone. Happy 2017. Make it so.
Stay safe. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I'm serious. I was like getting ready.
Doing that thing they do.
You're gonna go help get Hunter into bed. I said, well, you know I'm leaving. Well, yeah. I thought you'd go.
But if she goes out with any of her friends, mm-hmm. you're just like, yeah, okay, see you
yeah,
later.
Just go. I'll take care of everything.
Yeah. He's like, but then like
you just like go off, and of course, and then there's like I gotta read Toy Story 3. You know, get through all that. Is there anything else you need? Would you like me? Well, if you could take the, I know it's cold out, but if you could move the swing set to the other side of the yard before you go. You know, it's always like some like a totally ridiculous
some
thing.
Herculean thing.
Yeah, you know, it's just like you just can't accomplish on your own.
Oh, this sounds like good post show stuff. I'll go move the swing set over.